Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here on Monday. It's December 3rd, 2018. We've made it to the final month of the NFL regular season. And I guess technically, Mike McCarthy did as well, although he did not make it much further. Of course, Mike McCarthy was fired yesterday evening after I'm trying to think of the right adjective. Shameful seems a little much because the other team's trying hard, but certainly a wildly disappointing loss at home to the Arizona Cardinals, which ended Mike McCarthy's 12-plus year reign with the Packers on Sunday night. We're going to talk about that and a bunch of other things. Joining me to do that today on the show is a frequent guest making what I believe he characterized was his contractual obligatory monthly appearance on the Bill Barnwell Show. It is CBS's Will Brinson. Will, what's up?
Bill, what's going on, man? I'm never glad when somebody gets fired, because yes, Lord knows that there'd be enough people cheering when I'm fired, I'm sure. It'll happen at some point, but you know, it does. I mean, if we're being honest from a hashtag content perspective, it is a beneficial move for us because it was happening anyway at the end of the season. There was no chance Mike McCarthy was going to be retained, I think, short of a running the table at the end of the season and then winning the Super Bowl and maybe that reboots things. But it is interesting, the timing of it, because I think Adam Schefter tweeted this, but he McCarthy's now just the second coach in NFL history to win a Super Bowl with a team and then be fired by that team in the middle of a season. It's remarkable for a franchise that has been so consistent and so, such a blue blood franchise. They do everything by the book, but for the people, the Green Bay Packers, owned by America. And then they fire a coach in the middle of the season when Mike McCarthy had to leave the stadium and like walk out onto his own street to get to his car. I mean, how bad is that?
Yes, absolutely. I will say I've never been fired and had to walk onto Barnwell Street before to go grab my car and drive home. But I'm not sure. I hope it happens at some point, I suppose. I did something right to have a street name after me. And I think that's sort of what I'm thinking about with McCarthy as well. I mean, I wrote about this today. I know you did as well. I believe you did, if I'm not mistaken, no?
Yeah. I've got like four. I wrote like four. Yeah. Yes.
That's
yes.
The thing. There
Many ounces of virtual ink were spilled by me on Mike McCarthy.
Yes.
Most of them.
And I mean, I think in the long run, Packers fans are going to look back and say, well, he wasn't always perfect, but he did a pretty good job. He did win a Super Bowl with this guy as our head coach. And the record is good. The record's going to stand out as we get further away from this situation. It does seem like, though, very rarely when a coach gets fired in midseason, do you have sort of those people saying, oh, he shouldn't have been fired. He should have been given till the end of the year to prove that he could be a better coach. It just seems like it was time. And it certainly seems like even if they waited until the end of the season, it wouldn't have made much of a difference. This was going to be a job that we knew, like you said, was going to come up at the end of the year and that the Packers were going to be looking for, some sort of new blood in their coaching staff. And the point I made in my column today was that it seems like this was the last sort of card to fall. This offseason with the Packers, they made the changes that fans have been clamoring for years. They went out and they replaced Dom Capers with Mike Pettine. They promoted Ted Thompson up and gave Brian Gutekunst the job as the general manager. And they went out and signed a bunch of guys in free agency, and that didn't fix the Packers' problems. They've been worse, to be honest, in some ways than they were a year ago. So this was the only thing that was left to do, really. You can't replace Rodgers. He's just signed a 4-year, $18 billion extension. He's going to be around for a while. So McCarthy's sort of the last thing you can change if you're frustrated with the Packers. And I think given how they've played this year, it's hard not to be frustrated with the Packers.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that there's a really stark similarity here between Mike McCarthy and Andy Reid in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Andy Reid was hired in 1999, McCarthy 2006, but they both went to a Super Bowl in their first 5 or 6 years. McCarthy won his, of course. Andy Reid did not, and then they both missed the playoffs in their final 2 years, and it just sort of felt at the end like things had gotten stale and things just weren't working anymore. And that happens a lot, I believe, in the NFL. I mean, you do too. Just sometimes it's just time for a change. The thing with McCarthy, to me, the biggest problem is he just didn't seem interested in changing up what sort of approach he had on offense and taking the modern rules of the NFL that allowed him to not to cheat, but if somebody says play within this giant field and you just sit in the corner and you don't utilize the whole field. That's what it felt like. He didn't want to maximize the system, and he was just sort of stuck in the past, and I think it was wearing on Aaron Rodgers. So it's not a smart move, but it was the necessary.
You say it wasn't a smart move. What makes you say that?
I think it's a smart move. I think this could be a case of the grass is always greener on the other side.
Sure.
And that happened in Philadelphia too. We got Chip Kelly, he's the new next big thing, and Chip was great in Philly for a little while, and then Andy Reid is doing well in Kansas City, and Chip Kelly's is back at Oregon. Back at UCLA in the college ranks. And so I think that the presumption that the Packers, and Tom Silverstein did a nice job of writing about this on PackersNews.com, but the presumption that the Packers are going to hire a new head coach and just win a couple Super Bowls with Aaron Rodgers is wrong. That's not going to automatically happen. The percentages of it happening are very low, and I think that there's a very good chance that whoever they hire could struggle even in the first year with Aaron Rodgers, who will be just turned 35 on the day McCarthy was fired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, the funny thing about the Eagles, of course, is that the guy who they won a Super Bowl with was Doug Peterson, who, of course, is Andy Reid's protege to some extent, spent time with him in Philadelphia, I believe, and in Kansas City as the OC. So they won it with, perhaps literally, Andy Reid light.
Maybe the Packers will win their Super Bowl with DeShone Kizer, who is the backup. It's Doug Peterson, of course, the backup to Donovan McNabb, or the starter for Donovan McNabb when McNabb was drafted.
Very interesting usage of DeShone Kizer. I was not expecting that. Entirely possible. And I mean, I think you bring up Reed, and it's a really good point that it's a very fairly similar situation. But what's interesting is what happened next with Reed is that he went to Kansas City immediately, won immediately, but then also changed what he was doing. I mean, he had some spread concepts, certainly, during his time in Philadelphia with Michael Vick. But I mean, really got more aggressive with that. And then we know that he hired Brad Childress to be the spread game coordinator. And then over the last 2 years, we've seen that offense really flourish and really thrive and change things up and be, a different sort of attack and a lot of similarities to what we saw in Philadelphia, but some flourishes that Andy Reid was not doing, I think, a decade earlier. And with Mike McCarthy, I wonder if the same thing happens when he moves to a new opportunity. I mean, this could be a chance for him to look and say, hey, well, maybe we weren't doing stuff that other teams are doing. Maybe we need to get more aggressive. Maybe I need to change and incorporate more of the stuff that's succeeding around the league or at the college level. And I wonder, with McCarthy, do you think he's going to, number one, get a new head coaching job as early as 2019? And do you think he's going to be successful in that new role?
One, yes. I think he will definitely get a job in 2019, primarily because, I'm sure we'll talk about some more possible jobs that could open. I just think there are going to be some jobs. This bill feels like, we've got two head coaches fired, and one's a freaking Packers coach. And we're at week 13. This feels like, depending on how things play out, this could be a really widespread season in terms of changeover. Like almost a third of the coaches could end up being fired or potentially resign, whatever it is, however it plays out. So yeah, sure. I think he will get another job. I don't think, however, I do think that he'll be successful. I just don't know that we can guarantee it, because if he doesn't change what he does, let's say he went to Cleveland and he took over, and I think that's a reasonable assumption that could be it's a plausible situation because of the connection with John Dorsey. So I think that could happen. If it does, I don't know that he is necessarily going to have success with Baker Mayfield, because is he going to come in and utilize what he's always done, or is he going to actually incorporate new spread concepts that work with what Baker has used in the past? I think if he came in and tried to run his same system that he ran with Aaron Rodgers with Baker Mayfield, that he might actually struggle just because of the way that it doesn't it doesn't incorporate those college concepts that Baker's really succeeded with.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the Browns' offense yesterday was not very good, it's fair to say, but they've been great with Freddie Kitchens so far. I mean, it's not, I think they should hire a new head coach. I don't think they should stick with Greg Williams, but it might be a thing where they say, hey, we want to stick with the offense we have, or something similar to the offense we have, and not go with McCarthy at the same time. I mean, it is putting, two and two together and seeing John Dorsey, seeing the seeing the Packers brain trust there in the executive box in Cleveland, and McCarthy's going to be available. He's available now. I mean, I guess theoretically they could even interview him and hire him for next season now if they were so inclined. But I think he's going to be okay. I do think that he's just been successful for long enough, and I think his strengths are the stuff we don't typically see. I mean, his game management, I think it's fair to say I'm not especially big fan of. I think about his decision making has not been great. The modernity of the offense certainly has not been there, but he's a good coach. I mean, he won for a lot of years, and even though he had Aaron Rodgers, I mean, I looked at the numbers, and he won about as much as you might expect given having a franchise quarterback like Aaron Rodgers in the fold. So I've been critical of him, but I think he's going to be a good coach for a young quarterback somewhere around the NFL, whether it's Cleveland or elsewhere. And now, of course, you look at the Packers, and they've got to make a head coaching hire, and I'm certainly intrigued by what their options are going to be. And I guess this sort of timing, firing McCarthy now, I could see it as a way to, give him some sort of clarity about his future and not spend the next 4 weeks as a lame duck head coaching candidate. But then the flip side of that is maybe they're making this move now to try and beat everyone to the punch in hiring some of the college coaches who are becoming available. So, do you think the names who have been thrown out there are likely to be a plausible coaching candidate for the Packers in 2019?
When we say the names that have been thrown out there, are we talking like Matt Campbell, and who nobody knows like literally anything about Matt Campbell other than he's a good coach and he's at Iowa State, or like a Lincoln Riley? I actually think, Bill, that what we're going to see from the Packers, and I don't know. I here's the interesting thing: when you think about the Packers and their head coaching history, mm-hmm. you think, all right, we've got a guy, like Mike Holmgren, Mike Sherman, Mike McCarthy, anybody named Mike with a history in the West Coast offense. I mean, but, what's interesting, these guys are like big, famous names, and they have, streets or, buildings named after them in Green Bay. But the reality is most of these guys were up-and-coming young OCs when they were hired by the Green Bay Packers, and they didn't, they didn't have a wealth of experience, certainly any head coaching experience. And so I wonder, will they dip into that pool again, or will they try and bring someone from college? Will they go with a veteran head coach? Like, who's the one who's pulling the strings here? Is this going to be a GM Brian Gutekunst gets to do it, or is this a Mark Murphy? It seems as if it's leaning towards Murphy, so I guess he'll go with the sort of entrenched establishment move. My guess then would be they don't go after a big name, or they don't go after a big name current college head coach. But maybe they could chase a big name offensive coordinator or an up and coming offensive coordinator. Josh McDaniels is certainly the name that I think everybody has on the top of their head. Not only because of his success with Tom Brady and the incorporation of modern spread concepts and a high offense with an older quarterback. The Patriots don't have to play the Packers for like 8 more years. McDaniels would, in theory, if you read, I know that Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports is reporting on Monday that McDaniels might be able to assemble like an all-star staff. Maybe a Cliff Kingsbury could come with him and bring along a noted one of their quarterback coaches, Handsome McNiceface is another. I think that there's something to the idea that Josh McDaniels, with his experience with an older quarterback in Tom Brady, could come in and make this work. I think that, to me, is the spiciest name of all.
But, and here's the flip side of this, and you know where I'm going to go with this. This has not worked that well for teams in the past in terms of waiting for McDaniels to make a decision. Actually, I guess it technically worked out well for the Colts. They're doing just fine, but you get the idea. I mean, it's a big ask. Like, do you want to sit here as the Packers on December 3rd and say, okay, we're going to wait until, the end of January, theoretically, if they make it to the Super Bowl or they make a deep playoff run before we can even talk to Josh McDaniels, and let all those college coaching candidates, let that sort of first run of possible viable NFL coaching candidates hit us in January and not talk to them? I mean, are you going to sit there and let John Harbaugh, if he hits the market, let John Harbaugh go somewhere else and on the chance of getting McDaniels? I mean, it's a fascinating thing to really think about. And I think this is a very appetizing job. When I wrote about this earlier this year, it was the most appealing job opportunity to me in the NFL that was likely to come open. And I think McDaniels is going to do well if he does become a head coach somewhere, but it's a dangerous game to play. I mean, you don't want to be the one left standing without the ideal coaching candidate. So I'm going to be fascinated.
I want to ask you this. Do you think, and I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer to this. And Lincoln Riley is a really smart guy. Mm-hmm. I watched him up close at East Carolina when he was the offensive coordinator there before he jumped to Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Do you think that in 2018, a young college coach operating with these modern NFL, with these modern concepts on offense, can come in and apply those concepts at the NFL level and have them work on a consistently successful basis? Do you think that the game has changed enough for that to work, or is there still a big step forward? I don't know the answer, and you might not know the answer. It's a tough thing to peg.
Right, and I think the reality is we've seen it work in other places. Kingsbury's offense is not the Chiefs' offense, but certainly the Chiefs have taken some stuff from that and worked with that with Andy Reid. I mean, the Rams have taken some stuff from Lincoln Riley and succeeded with the guys they have there. I think it can work, but like anything, there might be a period of transition. It might not work immediately. You know, with Sean McVay, he was a guy who had not been a head coach at any level, had been the OC in Washington, was not great there. Their offense was good, certainly, but it's not as if they were the Rams, you know, and what we've seen from them since he's been a head coach. So I think to some extent you're hiring for the mind as opposed to the scheme or opposed to the playbook or opposed to even what they've done elsewhere, thinking, okay, well, if you put Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, he's going to come up with a certain set of solutions to the problems he faces in college. And then if you put him at the pro level with Aaron Rodgers, well, you have to trust that he's smart enough and he's been creative enough to mold an offense to the specific rules of the NFL and the specific strengths and weaknesses of the Packers team. And that can work. We saw that with McVay. He's been better with the Rams than he was with Washington, but we've seen it not work. With Chip is another great example of that, where he was able to sort of flourish early as he, you know, implemented what he did at Oregon at the pro level, but without a mobile quarterback and without sort of a plan B for when teams adjusted to what he was able to do with tempo, he really struggled. And by the time he got to San Francisco, he was a mess, and that offense did not work. So you don't know for sure, but I think Lincoln Riley gives you a pretty high ceiling in terms of the opportunities. And if you think, okay, we want to hire a young head coach who's going to mold an offense that can immediately work, and then also work with a young quarterback after we lose Aaron Rodgers in 2021 or 2022, hopefully, I think he's at least on paper, or McDaniels is on paper, the guy who's going to be able to do that. And I think that's all you can ask for. I don't think there ever going to be a guarantee when it comes to hiring a head coach.
Yeah, Lincoln Riley's fascinating too. He's 3 years older than Sean McVay.
Yes.
Like how is he 3 years old? Like you look at, I mean, he doesn't look that old, but it's inconceivable that Sean McVay's in the middle of his second year dominating the NFL and Lincoln. I think that we get caught up in, and I think NFL owners are going to be caught up in this over the next 12 months plus, maybe several years, trying to find the next Sean McVay. Mm-hmm. And they need to understand that he's a unicorn and there isn't a next Sean McVay, and that you can hire, you can do the right thing and hire a good young offensive mind who mm-hmm. can help you build around a quarterback. But expecting to get the next Sean McVay is going to be tough. The Lincoln Riley thing too, I think he's going to cost so much money to leave Norman, Oklahoma, not a John Gruden deal or anything, but I think he's going to command serious top dollar. The benefit for anybody chasing him is that the Cowboys don't appear that they'll be involved in that hunt anymore. There were, you hear rumors about him mm-hmm. liking that job, Jerry liking Lincoln Riley, understandably. But he's not going to be cheap. And I guess Josh McDaniels probably won't be cheap either. Let me ask you this. Do you think there's a chance the Packers hire a defensive coach or hire John Harbaugh, hire like a retread? Is that, it's not their MO, but is it possible?
Yeah, of course it's possible. I don't think it's necessarily unlikely. You know, I think if you think about this team's weaknesses and what they do, you might be better off saying, okay, we trust Aaron Rodgers. We just have to get someone who has a modern offensive mind. And if we plug in, Cliff Kingsbury, as the OC, and then go to perhaps Vic Fangio and say, hey, why don't you take over this defense? We can weaken a divisional rival, and we're going to give Cliff Kingsbury, full control of the offense. You don't worry about that. But you take care of the defense. You run the team on a day-to-day basis. That's not the worst idea in the world either. I don't know that I would be upset about that, even compared to, say, going out and getting McDaniels and building a staff with an offensive mind. So I think there's a lot of flexibility, and there's a lot of talent here. I think this is a thing where the Packers could be It could be a thing where they make a leap forward and win the division in 2019 would hardly be out of the question for me. We should move on. We got a bunch of other stuff.
I agree with you completely. And the one thing that, of course, you have to factor in if you take Vic Fangio, you're hurting a defensive, you're hurting a division rival, which is always a plus.
Always a plus to beat up that old divisional rival. We got to talk about some other stuff here. We got to get to this Steelers-Chargers game. What are the odds that I would have you on the show on a week where the Chargers would have a dramatic victory in a primetime game against one of the top contenders in the AFC, and it would not be the first topic of discussion here on the show?
I would say the odds are extremely low, especially given Philip Rivers' new haircut, the fact that he's got a ninth kid on the way, really, really all setting up to just be a Philip Rivers, you know, focused show. And instead, Mike McCarthy trumps Rivers in that regard.
Well, you just brought up haircuts, and certainly, I think we need to talk before we get to this game about Dollar Shave Club, who was a sponsor of the show today, and I use Dollar Shave Club myself. I can't speak for Philip Rivers. I don't know what his daily routine is in terms of hair care, in terms of just keeping himself fresh, smelling good. I'm not going to lie, the fact that he has a ninth child on the way, I don't think he's spending a lot of time, in the bathroom trying to get stuff done. But the good news is, if you're using Dollar Shave Club, you're saving way more time than you are by going to the store and going out and getting stuff, because Dollar Shave Club is taking the stuff you need in the bathroom, your body washes, your shampoos, your razor, and your shaving cream, of course. And you don't have to go to the store to get it. They're shipping it to your door. Philip Rivers, I don't know if he has his eight children on package duty, if they're waiting to pick up those packages when they arrive. But the good news is Dollar Shave Club is going to send that stuff to you, and you're going to save the time that you need when you have eight children. You can save that whether you have zero children, eight children, anywhere in between. Get that stuff sent to you with Dollar Shave Club, and you're going to save time no matter what. And even better, Dollar Shave Club stuff is going to be better than whatever you're going to be purchasing at the store. I'm using it myself. And again, I'm not someone who uses the hair care products. I'm not going to lie. That's for me. That's because I don't have a lot of hair. Philip Rivers does. I'm sure he might use it. But I use the Dollar Shave Club toothpaste. I get it sent once every month or so. It is great. I never worry about running out of toothpaste, heading out the door with some gross-smelling breath. I'm not going to lie. If I didn't brush my teeth, that would happen. But I'm brushing my teeth, and my breath smells pretty good. Not going to lie. I feel like I'm impressed with what I'm working with, and that is strictly due to DollarShaveClub.com. And with their handsome discount, the more you buy, the more you save. And right now, they've got a bunch of starter sets that you can try for just $5, like their oral care kit, which includes that toothpaste I just mentioned a moment ago. And after that, the restock box ships regularly sized products at regular price. So I don't know what you're waiting for, but you can get your starter set for just $5 right now at dollarshaveclub.com/Barnwell. That's my last name, Barnwell. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Barnwell. Now back to the show.
My goodness, what a comeback. I don't know that I give the Chargers full credit, because they were dead, done, finished. That game was over. The Steelers, who I had pegged as one of my best bets of the week, were going to cover easily. Then they decided to put a linebacker on Keenan Allen for the rest, for like an entire half. And the result was disastrous for Pittsburgh, who, you know, we try to take this big picture view of the NFL and not go week to week. But that loss is bad for the Steelers, Bill. I mean, you know, coming off the stretch that they're on in terms of sort of, you know, struggling on the road, then you come home, they lose their first game ever where they had 14-point lead or more at home. I think they're 221-2 now in the history of the freaking Steelers. And I think the Chargers probably clinched their playoff spot last night. Not officially, but effectively clinched it. And I think the Steelers put themselves in a real weird danger zone kind of spot when it comes to, you know, guaranteeing that they clinch the division and guaranteeing that they make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think we should absolutely talk about the playoff implications of this game and those two races after the break in a bit. But let's talk about this game itself. I mean, in terms of where the Chargers were, like you said, 23-7 at halftime. And I have to admit, you know, I was watching the game, and I was writing my McCarthy column, and I said, you know what, halftime, I'm good. Like, the Chargers are going to lose this game. I don't have to worry about it. I'm going to focus. I'm not going to keep the game out in the background, but I'm going to write my column. I'm going to look over and see what's going on. I looked up, and it was 23-15, and the Chargers were, you know, getting the football back, and they got a punt return to tie the game up. And I was like, well, that's interesting. I still think they're going to lose this game. You know, the Chargers, they always find a way to lose this game, but I'm still going to pay more attention again. And they did not lose the game. They, in fact, took the lead. They gave up a touchdown to make it 30-30. And then I figured, okay, well, they'll either go three and out, they'll turn the ball over, or they will score too quickly and the Steelers will win the game. And they didn't. They ran a perfect drive. And to the icing on the cake, they kicked a field goal to win the game with no time remaining on the clock. And granted, it took three tries because the Steelers were apparently playing Madden and deciding to troll in a very disadvantageous situation, but they won a primetime game with a field goal in a key moment. I feel like that's never happened in franchise history before.
Yeah, it's wild. And if they hadn't been offsides in the first one, I understand why you would do the offsides thing, assuming they were doing it on purpose and not just being dummies. I understand why you would do it on like multiple chip shots against maybe like Justin Tucker to try and just gain an edge and hope the refs don't blow the whistle or throw a flag. I'm not sure why you would do it on a lengthy field goal against the Chargers, who have the longest history in as far as recent NFL history of gagging away wins by with bad kicking. Philip Rivers more or less admitted to Michelle Tafoya after the game. She's like, "How does it feel? You know, you went on a game kick." And he's like, "Oh my god, oh jeez, oh boy, it feels good." I mean, like he could tell, like he was immensely relieved to win a game on a kick. Like, and so I don't know why Pittsburgh. I don't want to dog on Mike Tomlin because I think Mike Tomlin has like Mike McCarthy, sort of maybe the AFC counterpart to Mike McCarthy. He has an impeccable coaching record in terms of wins and losses every year. You know, hasn't made it back to get that you know, to chase the Super Bowl in several years. There's always drama around the quarterback, and there are a lot. I think there are a lot of questions about Mike Tomlin's in-game strategy, if you will, and execution when it comes to how his team does certain things. His challenges are almost never great. It feels like. I don't think he necessarily plays conservative as McCarthy does, but I mean, at some point, don't you go grab Keith Butler by the collar and say, "Stop putting a linebacker on Keenan Allen. He's wide open on every play. He's their best." I mean, I don't know. It was a flummoxing loss for the Steelers.
Yeah, I mean, it really didn't seem like they ever adjusted to the Chargers lining up Allen in the slot, and I think it's pretty shocking that they wouldn't have an answer. I mean, they certainly don't have, you know, it's one thing to think, okay, well, we don't have Ryan Shazier. We're going to struggle against tight ends. We might struggle in the running game. You know, Austin Eckler might make a play or two as a receiver. That makes sense to me. And I just think that's the reality of the decisions they made in the offseason. But, you know, lining up in the dime or having Keenan Allen, you know, having a cornerback who can go into the slot with Keenan Allen is a positive thing. And the Steelers, we know that's been one of their weaknesses, over the course of the season. They've basically taken Artie Burns, who was a former high pick, out of the lineup altogether. I don't think he played any he played one defensive snap last night after sitting out the previous few weeks. You know, I don't believe Cameron Sutton, who was a pick of theirs, was active. Yes, yeah, he was inactive. They have gone with Cody Sensabaugh, Joe Hayden, and then Mike Hilton, basically as their primary defensive backs, but they didn't have an answer for it. And even if it was a you know, mediocre cornerback getting beaten, it's like, well, that stinks, but at least you made an adjustment. But they just did not have an adjustment over the course of this game. And you look at the Steelers, I mean, this could have been a three-game losing streak. They pulled out a miracle of a victory against the Jaguars in Week 11. And then even since that Panthers game, where they won 52-21, blew out the Panthers, looked like the most terrifying offense in the history of football. You know, they narrowly beat the Jags on a last second play, lose to the Broncos. Okay, granted, they look like they're about to tie up the game, but did not play well against the Broncos by any means. Now you lose to the Chargers. I mean, that's a really ugly three game stretch. 8 giveaways through those three games. And I don't think Ben Roethlisberger, he's been throws here and there, but he's missed a lot of opportunities, for big plays over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. He is. And it's weird too, because we sort of come to expect this a little bit, just in terms of Ben's up and down. I mean, he's just been a bad quarterback away from Heinz Field for several years. I mean, not terrible, but just like the drop off from an MVP level Roethlisberger to a he's not Alex Smith, but I mean, he just hadn't been very good. He's not very comfortable away from home, and so you know, to get them back in to Pittsburgh and to get that lead that they had and to be where they were, you know, it felt like, all right, this is the team that's starting to get it going. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh got refocused after that ugly loss to the Broncos. They know that they have the Raiders up next, and then the Patriots and the Saints. I mean, those are the two games that are going to decide their season. They look locked in. They get New England at home. They can beat New England. We saw them come close last year. They can get home field advantage, at least, you know, get the two seed, maybe give themselves an outside shot at the one seed if something catastrophic happened with Kansas City. And now that's all kind of blown to smithereens. I mean, it doesn't feel like that's on the table. Because they do have tough games left, and the Bengals are bad, and the Raiders are terrible. But we've seen over and over again under Mike Tomlin and with Ben Roethlisberger, we saw it last week against the Broncos. We almost saw it 2 weeks ago against the Jaguars. This Steelers team will go on the road, and they will lay an egg in spots that it's just unimaginable. And so I don't think anything is a free win anymore for Pittsburgh. And yeah, they haven't clicked in the last 2 years, Bill. They just, like, at no point have they really gotten it going the way that they should with Antonio Brown and James Conner and Le'Veon Bell for any, like, really long stretch in terms of offense.
Yeah, I mean, there's been weeks here and there, but it has not been been sort of the consistent month-long stretch where they look like the most terrifying offense in football. I mean, they have the talent to pull that off, and I think certainly, like you mentioned, the home-road splits are pretty dramatic, and you just don't get four games at home to prove that. Ben Roethlisberger, since the beginning of 2013, a 104.4 passer rating at home and an 87.4 passer rating on the road, so a 17-point drop-off, pretty dramatic. We are going to talk about the playoff implications of that game and of the AFC and AFC West, or AFC North, I should say, and AFC West divisional races after the break here on the Bill Barnwell Show. So nice to hear. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. That is, I have to admit, I forget who recorded that. That is a Daniel Dot production from the Fantasy Focused podcast. But I'm joined by CBS's Will Brinson. We are talking about the AFC. And let's talk about these two playoff races that suddenly look more wide open than we were expecting heading into this week. So let's talk about the AFC North. We were talking about the Steelers before the break. Let's talk about Steelers-Ravens, which suddenly might be a competition all over again. A few weeks ago, you know, it looked like the Steelers were basically locks to win the AFC North. The Ravens were 4-5. The Steelers at that same time were 6-2-1. Things have changed. The Steelers are now 7-4-1 in the AFC North. The Ravens are 7-5, a game back. And these two teams don't play again. They've already split their regular season stretch. But the Steelers, like you said, having a difficult schedule. I mean, it's at Oakland, hosting New England, at the Saints. And that is a brutal two-game stretch before Christmas with the Patriots and at the Saints. And then they host the Bengals in Week 17. The Ravens, meanwhile, at Kansas City next week. That is not exactly an easy matchup either. Hosting Tampa, at the Chargers, a very interesting game. And then hosting the Cleveland Browns in week 17. So, I mean, in terms of this race, well, I guess we'll start with this. The Steelers are 78.9% per ESPN's Football Power Index to win this division. The Ravens are at 21%. If you had to pick either of those bets and say, okay, this is the side I want to back at that rate, would you take the Steelers or would you take the Ravens?
Given the amount of value that I would get from the Ravens because of the 20%, I assume it would be like, I don't know. I can look up the odds on like Sportsbook or something like that, but I would go with the Ravens just because I think, Bill, when you look at these two teams, what you have is and the Steelers, by the way, -400, Ravens 3-1. So yeah, I would definitely take the Ravens in that spot rather than the bet on the Steelers. I think both teams are, like, if you looked at the betting markets in terms of what we would expect from their games remaining, I think both teams will be favored in two games, and both teams will be underdogs in two games. I would expect that the Steelers are dogs to the Patriots at home. And I think based on what we've seen from the Pittsburgh Steelers, they're the more likely team to mess up against a bad squad. Like, I think that they're the more likely club here to lay an egg in a weird spot. They're going to have a divisional rival in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look very good at all. And then Oakland on the road. You know, I think they'll probably win one of those games. Baltimore, I think, will probably go 2-2 as well.
Mm-hmm.
But could they? I feel like Baltimore is more likely to go 3-1 than Pittsburgh is to go 3-1. Does that make sense? Like there's more variance in what Pittsburgh might do and more value in Baltimore 3-1.
Now, the thing I have to say, though, when it comes to the Ravens, we don't have to go very far into the past. Think about a situation where they themselves lost against a mediocre football team, and that is week 17 of the 2017 season, when they needed to basically hold the Bengals on a fourth down to make the playoffs, and they did not do that. They did not, in fact, stop the Bengals from winning that football game. So, I mean, in terms of the Ravens, obviously they are on a winning streak. They've won their last three games. Are you enthused about what you've seen with Lamar Jackson? I mean, do you think they are a team that, given how they're playing, that they can, you know, that they can go 3-1? I mean, it just seems like, at least from my perspective, I don't know that the offense has been good enough for them to compete with the Chiefs. And anything can happen in a Chargers game, but I think the Chargers are just, with Lamar Jackson at quarterback right now, a significantly better football team to me than the Ravens are.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think that the Browns will be problematic, too, because of what they can do from a pass rush perspective and Myles Garrett playing well. The reason I like the Ravens is look at their current three-game win streak. And they lost to the Steelers by 7, go into their bye on a three-game losing streak, come out, start Lamar Jackson, and they managed to put up 24, 34, and 26 points against three terrible defenses in the Bengals, Raiders, Falcons. The good news is, the Chiefs, who are much better than maybe we think they are in a vacuum or just in a general sense, are not a great defense, and you can score on them. And I anticipate that Lamar Jackson and Gus Edwards will be able to use some read option stuff to put up points. And the Ravens' defense is playing pretty well. And then Tampa Bay, I don't think stands a chance at slowing down Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. So I think there's a shot that they could beat the Chiefs in just some sort of weird shootout where Patrick Mahomes turns into that gunslinger guy who makes some mistakes. And Baltimore, you know, turns him over a couple of times, and then I think they can reasonably. You know, there's no real road disadvantage to playing the Chargers. If anything, there might be a Baltimore home field advantage.
Right.
And then I think Cleveland in Week 17, Baltimore's defense. We saw Baker Mayfield against Houston. I think Baltimore's defense can present similar problems. So to me, there's a much better chance of the Ravens going 4-0, even though I don't love what they're doing on offense. And I think it is a little bit of a smoke and mirrors based on who they played since coming out of the bye. I do think that Baltimore has some upside there, and that the creativity they're using with Lamar Jackson and his legs, they just have to keep expanding on that. And if they do that, I think they can make a run.
I'm intrigued, and I'm a little concerned about Lamar Jackson staying healthy, just because he did briefly go into the concussion protocol against Atlanta. We did see some Robert Griffin III yesterday. If you were making the decision, if you were John Harbaugh, would you stick with Lamar Jackson, or would you bring back Joe Flacco if his hip is healthy enough for Flacco to play?
I would go with Lamar Jackson through the next 2 weeks, barring a absolute blowout in Kansas City or I think if you lose to Kansas City or lose to Tampa Bay, you can flick the switch, but I think that these are such valuable reps for Lamar Jackson in his rookie season against bad defenses in a system that he's fairly comfortable operating in, even if his completion percentage isn't exactly impressive. I would keep rolling with Lamar Jackson because he is the future. This doesn't look like, whether it's Joe Flacco or Lamar Jackson or whoever, it doesn't look like a Ravens team that's going to win the Super Bowl. Now, you get into the playoffs, they might make some magic happen. But I would at least wait until you're down like 20-3 at halftime to the Chargers before you really pull that plug and see what happens over the next 2 weeks against bad defenses.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest with you, even if I think Joe Flacco is the better quarterback right now, and I'm not a big Joe Flacco fan, but I do think he's the better option of the two in terms of just picking a quarterback to win one game outside of any context. But I like Lamar Jackson against the Chiefs because the Chiefs have a terrible run defense. Their run defense is absolutely atrocious. And I think if you want to win that game, if you're the Ravens, your best strategy is going to be to hold on to the football. It's going to be to run a bunch of drives and try and win time of possession and try and keep the Chiefs offense off the field. Not that your defense can't necessarily hold up, but at the same time, you want to keep them fresh and you want to keep the Chiefs the weakest part of the Chiefs team on the field for the vast majority of that football game. So I do think it should be a run heavy approach. And I do think that you want to have, you're much better off running the football with Lamar Jackson than you are with Joe Flacco as your primary quarterback. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's, I would agree with you, but I think Lamar Jackson is still the inferior quarterback to Joe Flacco. I think I might go back to Joe Flacco, in the playoffs if I were the Ravens, but it's tough to say. I just think that it's such a unique offense and such a unique player that I just struggle to think that they're going to win games against really good football teams.
Yeah, I think once you get up against good defenses, and I think the Chargers are becoming a really good defense. Derwin James is that was criminal of us not to mention Derwin James.
I apologize.
It's my fault. I mean, he was my ahead of him as a top five prospect coming out. He's incredible. It's either him or Bradley Chubb for defensive rookie of the year in my book, and there have been some really good defensive rookies. But I think the one thing about Lamar Jackson, there's a couple of interesting factions about Lamar Jackson or things that are, one. You know, what is John Harbaugh's job as a would-be lame duck coach who's likely to resign and step away in a similar, we expect after the season? Is his job to win games? Is his job to steward, Lamar Jackson in as a rookie? Like, it's a weird, not a weird moral quandary, but it is interesting. And then for, Steve Bisciotti, who's the owner, is there something to be said for the idea of playing out these four games, winning two of them, getting in the playoffs as a wild card team, and being able to tell season ticket holders and people who might want to buy season tickets next year that, hey, we got to the playoffs with Lamar Jackson as our quarterback, and he's going to be the starting quarterback next year. I mean, that flies in the notion of let's just win football games, but I do think there is some of that plays in here.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's this weird sort of dual incentive that I think is difficult to really maneuver. I don't think there's a wrong answer given the circumstances. I think if the Ravens don't make the playoffs and Lamar Jackson looks great, I don't think you have to be upset about that. I think if they do make the playoffs and Lamar Jackson doesn't look great, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world either. I think you want to have one of the two, though. I think if you end up with neither, with Lamar Jackson struggling and the Ravens miss the playoffs, then I think John Harbaugh's job might be in trouble. But we should talk about that Chargers playoff race as well. You mentioned the Derwin James interception, a really big play in that game. Ended up deciding the game, really. It was the only takeaway in a situation where the Steelers, you figure, were going to end up with a field goal in the worst case. And, of course, we know the game was decided by 3 points. So, obviously, a huge swing in terms of the final game situation. I agree with you. I think Derwin James is probably the favorite at this point. I think Bradley Chubb has better stats. I do think that, apparently the cops are coming for us because we didn't mention Derwin James. So I apologize that we have to go to jail now. But
you insulted Bradley Chubb, who, by the way, 10 sacks this season. So he only needs five to break Javon Curse's rookie record in 1999 of 14 and a half sacks. And the next three teams, the Broncos player, not in order, 49ers, Browns, and Raiders, all three in the bottom half of the league in terms of sacks allowed.
Yeah, I mean, it's been really impressive. And then I also think Darius Leonard with the Colts has been phenomenal. I know that the Colts are not the highest profile team, but certainly I think he's been incredible and been a game-changing player for them on defense. Well, let's get to the AFC West playoff picture in a moment. But first, if you're going to be purchasing tickets to that Chiefs-Chargers game we're going to get to, or any of the Steelers-Ravens games coming up over the final month of the year, or if you're purchasing tickets to any major sporting event, concert, anything that requires you to have something scanned to get into the building outside of your office, I would say just tickets specifically, well, you know who I want you to use. It's going to be our pals at SeatGeek, because SeatGeek is not only going to get you reliable tickets, but they're going to get you a really good deal as well. They're going to use their deal score technology to rate the tickets, so you know you're not paying too much to get into the game you want to see. And even better, if you happen to use the SeatGeek app for the first time, you can get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase by entering in promo code Barnwell. I'm someone who cannot use my own promo code, sadly, because I've used SeatGeek quite a few times, heading to Los Angeles for some family stuff soon, and I went on SeatGeek's app, purchase Lakers tickets. I am going to see LeBron James and a bunch of dudes who are not LeBron James, who are not quite as good, but who are going to do their best next to LeBron James with the Lakers. I got a good deal, and I got a good deal because I use SeatGeek, and I can't use my own promo code, but you can use it if you're using SeatGeek for the first time. So again, download the SeatGeek app, enter in promo code Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, my last name, and get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase today. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. I mean, this Chargers team, when they when they get going, when they are successful and when they are playing to their peak potential, which has always been a difficult thing with the Chargers, as we both know, I mean, I don't know that there is a better team in football in terms of being good on both sides of the ball. I mean, obviously this is a better defense to me than the Saints are, than the Chiefs are, than the Rams are. And the offense, I mean, when they're going, they are as good as anybody else in the league. To me, it's sort of, they have the highest ceiling in football to me. And in the past, they were a team that they would hit that ceiling for a half or a quarter. But for me, they can hit it for full games now, and they can be great against anybody for 60 minutes at a time now, which is an exciting development if you're a Chargers fan.
Yeah, it really is. I'm looking for it. I know I've got it in here somewhere. My bet on the Chiefs to win the AFC West at almost 3-1 that I made in Las Vegas. I will take this to Atlanta, Bill, and I will burn it. I will live stream myself burning that happily if Philip Rivers and the Chargers were to win this division and to host some playoff games and get to the Super Bowl. I will warn you this, and I'm going to warn everybody who's listening about this, because no, I'm telling you, I'm going to give you insight into the future that is 100% going to come true. Whether or not, maybe the Ravens beat the Chiefs this week. That I could actually see that happening. I know that's weird sounding. Ravens beat the Chiefs. I think the Chargers are going to dominate the Bengals in Los Angeles. It's not going to be close. They're going to win by 32 points. Then those two teams will both have records of 10-3. The Chiefs will be hosting the Chargers on Thursday night in Arrowhead Stadium on December 13th at 8:20 p.m. on Fox Broadcast Network. The Chargers will not be heavy underdogs. Many, many people will predict that the Chargers' time has finally come and that the Chargers are here to overthrow the Chiefs and take what is rightfully theirs, the AFC West crown. Do not, Bill Barnwell Show listeners, do not bet on the Chargers. Whatever you do, do not bet on the Chargers. I promise you that the Chargers are going to pee down their leg at some point in December, probably in Arrowhead Stadium, probably against Andy Reid, who's never lost to them since he got to Kansas City. 9-0, I think, or 10-0, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Do not bet on the Chargers in Arrowhead if the division title is on the line. Don't do it. Just trust me on this.
I cannot disagree with you. I will say Andy Reid, the first year, I believe, the Chargers did beat Andy Reid, but they have not beaten him since.
By the way, I don't know if you saw Mina Kimes and I talking about this, but if the Chargers do make the Super Bowl, we're going to have a Chargers Hive meetup where, and I think that included in this, or, you know, you're in there, of course. Mike Clay is a member. Mina, Greg Rosenthal qualifies, and we're all going to go to a bar in Atlanta. We're going to find a bar. Maybe if enough people will just rent out like the Tabernacle or something like that, and we're going to do 12 concurrent live podcasts with like a member of the Chargers there or something like that.
How many ex-Chargers kickers do you think we could invite to this get-together?
We were told this is a podcast thing. It's like, no, this is actually a ritualistic, I can't even say what it would be, but like, I'm sorry, we have to invite all these old Chargers kickers here to this really old church that now serves as like a music venue. So it's not spooky at all. Just come on in, guys. It'll be fun.
We're just going to sacrifice Nate Kading to the gods to give the Chargers a chance of winning the Super Bowl. Oh boy. I'm in, you know, I'm in, I'm anxious should about send, the Chargers, but
should we send, if this happens, should we send a like a formal invitation or just like an evite or a paperless post?
I think it should be formal. I think we should send someone. We should send a man bedecked in a tuxedo to the homes of Young Ho Ko and Nick Novak and just see which ones of them show up. I think we could probably get Young Ho Ko. I don't think that's out of the question. That's obviously perhaps putting the cart before the horse. Is that the statement? Is it putting the horse before the cart? I forget which one it is.
Putting the cart before the horse.
Okay. Yeah. So you wouldn't use a cart to pull a horse. Obviously the opposite makes more sense now that I think about it for several seconds, but yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm going to be skeptical of the Chargers in that game. I mean, it's a short week. It is a legitimate road game as opposed to the typical Chargers home game that masquerades as a road game. It is a tough matchup for them, of course. I think their secondary is super talented, but I mean, they have, you know, they're sort of top heavy when it comes to the secondary. I mean, Casey Hayward is obviously phenomenal. Derwin James has been great, but, Jahlil Dye, Adrian Phillips, Michael Davis now starting at corner. I mean, those guys are relative weak spots. You would figure that the Chiefs are going to be able to isolate one of their star players against those guys in the secondary. But what I would say now, thinking about the Chiefs, and they did win yesterday, it wasn't the sort of dominant game you would have expected against the Raiders, a team that is certainly had a very good Patrick Mahomes, got hit a ton in that game, and they were not as good without Kareem Hunt at running back. They ended up going with a bit of a rotation. We saw some Spencer Ware, we saw some Damian Williams. That was mostly it when it came to the running back opportunities. They did go out and sign Charkendrick West today to be sort of another person in that rotation. But I mean, even given, we don't have to talk about the Kareem Hunt situation. Obviously, you know, it happened, and I do agree with the Chiefs doing what they did. I don't think I have a ton more to say about it than that. I think everything that's been said over the weekend kind of fits what I would want to say as well, in terms of, you know, the Chiefs' interest in obtaining a video, and with Kareem Hunt's motivations and how he acted in the moment and after the moment. But I mean, this is a team that certainly is going to be a weaker team, it feels like, without Kareem Hunt at running back.
Yeah, I mean, you look, we I think that you and I have enough credit, or at least like built up cachet, to say that like what he did is horrible, and sure, on a personal level, of course, we're worried about the people involved, but we do have a job to talk about football. And
right,
if you watch the Chiefs offense, they were significantly worse in the run game. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is the leading rusher. They do not want that to be the case. That is a serious, serious problem in terms of balancing out what they do. And Kareem Hunt was not the focal point of this offense throughout the season. It's been Patrick Mahomes. They've won passing the ball. They've passed the ball big. But when you get to the playoffs, and if you have a lead, you're going to want to be able to salt that lead away. And I thought that Spencer Ware at times looked pretty good running the ball. You know, he showed some flashes. Clearly, you know, it hadn't been used quite as much this year. I actually thought that Damian Williams, maybe more than anybody in that game, flashed as a potential impact runner. But it was just the explosion that you want to see out of him. But I mean, Kareem Hunt, remember, he fumbled, of course, in that first game, first touch or whatever against the Patriots, and has been, you know, steady in terms of not turning the ball over, producing, you know, he's dangerous in a passing game. You don't have to take him off the field. So I think it's a really big loss. And Sammy Watkins looks like he might not end up playing. I don't think the Chiefs have peaked. I don't think the Chiefs are like, you know, declining into a mediocre offense, but I think it is fair to wonder if the Chiefs peaked a little bit too early, at least in terms of health and what they're doing on offense. Now, defensively, maybe they get better down the stretch and they're a more complete team, but I think it's going to be, I don't think the Chiefs are crescendoing into the playoffs.
Yeah, certainly. And I think their ceiling, you know, to me, is a little lower on offense without Kareem Hunt at running back. Yeah. And they're going to have to adjust. There's obviously nothing else they can do. You have to hope that if you're the Chiefs that you get Eric Berry back for that Chargers game. I think that's the moment where you want him back, not for really Antonio Gates, but just having someone who is going to help in the running game, or help on run defense, and sort of have another athlete back there who's going to, you know, limit the big plays. You know, have a guy who's going to tackle all those drag routes that the Chargers are going to run, and have someone who is going to make Keenan Allen, you know, who's going to limit what Keenan Allen can do over the middle of the field. And I could buy that. I don't know what Eric Berry's going to be. I mean, he's missed almost two full years. I think it's impossible to say he's going to be, you know, the game-changing safety he was. But I do think even 70% of Eric Berry is going to be better than the guy we saw previously. And in terms of the schedule, I mean, this is a rough three-game stretch for the Chiefs. It's hosting Baltimore, hosting the Chargers on a short week, like you mentioned, and then at Seattle, a team that has been very tough at home, unsurprisingly, and it's going to be a playoff team this year before they finish with Oakland in Week 17. And for the Chargers, like you said, Cincinnati next week, Kansas City on the road, hosting Baltimore, a tough team, and at Denver, a team that you know, is on a winning streak. They might be playing for a possible playoff spot, or at least possibly for a, you know, the sixth seed in the AFC come Week 17. They play San Francisco, Cleveland, Oakland before the Chargers. They could run the table and be 9-6 heading into Week 17. So, I mean, there's still a lot to be decided when it comes to this division.
Yeah, the one thing I will note is that if the Chargers are unable to overtake the Chiefs, in other words, they sort of need the Chiefs to lose another game, because even if they beat them once, they'll still split the head-to-head.
Right.
And if you look at the division matchup at 2-2, it's not unlike, it's pretty unlikely that the Chiefs with you know, with just Oakland, other than, the Chiefs are not going to give up two divisional games, I don't believe.
Right.
Maybe that, you know, they're going to have to get some help from Seattle or from Baltimore in order to catch the Chiefs to get that bye. Or it's possible that the Chargers are like a 12 win team, and they're the fifth seed in the AFC. Wouldn't that be delightfully Chargers-esque?
It would be, yes. Let me ask you, Will, if you had to pick between one of two scenarios, which do you think is more likely? Do you think it's more likely that the Chargers are playing in Week 17 against the Broncos with a chance of winning the AFC West, or more likely that they are playing for a possible playoff berth against the Broncos, where if they lose to the Broncos, they are out of the playoffs altogether?
If they had lost last night, I would say the latter. But I think that's the sort of win that vaults Philip Rivers is going to put up some massive numbers against the Bengals. I'm telling you, they are going to beat. I don't know what the line. I haven't seen the line yet. They're going to beat the Bengals by 35 points. It's a terrible Bengals. Everything about what Cincinnati doesn't do well right now with Andy Dalton out and AJ Green hurt. They can't protect Jeff Driskel, and the Chargers pass rush is working right now, and they just can't stop anybody on defense. The Chargers should sit out Melvin Gordon this week too. Just roll with Justin Jackson and Austin Eckler. I think there is a little bit of a look ahead factor, but I just think this is a game where Philip Rivers will dominate. They will get to 10-3, and they're gonna have a shot at the division. I don't think they're gonna close it, but I do not think that they will be playing for their playoff lives on December 30th. Mainly, that's a stupid amount of confidence in them. I just think at 9 wins, they're gonna get to 10, and 10 wins is going to get you in as a wild card at bare minimum in the AFC.
Yeah, I mean, they are clearly favored to do the first scenario of those two that I laid out. Chargers, at the moment, according to FPI, 82.6% chance of finishing as the fifth seed in the AFC, a 10.8% chance of finishing. Actually, no, sorry, a little higher. It's 11.9% chance of winning the division. And for playoffs, they are 98.8%. So 1.2% chance of that Broncos scenario, or something similar to that Broncos scenario, playing out over the final few weeks of the year. So that would be Chargers as the 5 seed. And the enormous favorite to finish as the 4 seed now in the AFC is the winner of the AFC North. So we could get a Chargers-Steelers rematch is the most likely outcome at Heinz Field come January. How would you handicap that game? Would you pick the Chargers again, or would you say that last night was an aberration and you would stick with the Steelers?
That's a great question. I think that a lot would depend on, I think, the health of James Conner and Melvin Gordon. Of course, the Steelers are going to have to go to either Stephen Ridley or my boy Jalen Samuels at NC State, but he's not really a feature back per se. He's really more of a sort of a guy that you move around into different spots, and I don't know that they'll just run him 30 times. I would be surprised if that was the case. I would make the Chargers. I think the Steelers would have to be slight favorites because they're the Steelers. They have the firepower that they do. They were leading at halftime. It's a home game in Heinz Field. I would say that the Steelers are somewhere between 1.5 to 3 point favorites. Just basically a pick between two really good teams. In Pittsburgh. And also that means that if the Chargers are that 5 seed, and that is likely where they end up, it means that they probably lost in embarrassing fashion to Kansas City on Thursday.
Interesting. I think that'll be a fun game. I don't have a prediction. I just think that'll be a fun playoff game to check out in the AFC come January. And Will, you are free until that month. Your December obligation to the show is over, but of course, if you want to hear more Will Brinson, you do a podcast quite frequently.
Every single day, the Pick Six podcast on CBS Sports, but also on iTunes, of course, Stitcher, wherever. It's in your inbox by 6 a.m. every morning, so you can get through that commute with a little snark, a little mirth, a little talk about football. We'll have Brady Quinn on Tuesday. We do Picks Against the Spread on Friday. Thursday, we do Fantasy Talk. Heath Cummings actually came on and said to bench Drew Brees. Wow. And I called him crazy. He was right. Drew Brees was not very good, and he probably lost a lot of people to fantasy leagues. So check that out. You can follow me on Twitter, at Will Brinson. And I'm happy to come on at any point in December, Bill, if you're so inclined.
You know that's against the rules. It's banned. You can only once a month.
Hey. I'm a rebel, man. I break the rules. Shatter the rules.
Awesome. Well, it is always a pleasure to have you on. And if we will see, I would have you on quite frequently, but we will see.
I won't be offended if you don't have me or do have me either way.
Now it seems like it's quite a conundrum, but we will see. I certainly enjoy having you on the show every time you come on, and I'd recommend people check out the Pick Six podcast as well. But Will, thanks so much for coming on today.
All right, Bill.
All right. Thanks so much to Will Brinson of CBS, frequent contributor to the show. Love having Will on. You should check him out on Twitter at Will Brinson. We got more audio coming later this week. Another show coming, I believe, on Thursday, but more audio coming. Hopefully not more coaches fired to discuss. Hopefully some interesting stuff happening. Talk about on the Bill Barnwell Show in the NFL come later this week. Thanks for listening.